It is Saturday, November 21st, 2009, 10:06 a.m. on the central coast of California. Today on Geek Speak, Geek News, and the second half, your questions and comments about technology. It's time now for Geek Speak.
We're through being cool. We're through being cool. Eliminate the minis and the twits.
Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. This is Geek Speak. My name's Lyle Troxell. In the air room with me are geeks. Miles Elam. Miles is a student, a bit of a slacker. He's also my employee. I forgot that I even mentioned that you work for me. Because the other day I was asking you to do something really lame, and I went, he works for me, so I can do that. It's awesome.
Good morning.
What have you been doing at work, Miles?
Lately?
Yeah.
Oh, you know.
Yeah, that's what I thought. All right, moving on. Ben Jaffe's a freelance media guy and instructor, and he can help you with your computer, especially Macintoshes.
Morning. Yeah, especially Macintoshes. I don't want no Windows 7.
No?
Mm-mm.
Not even a Windows 7 party?
No. Oh, yeah. I wanted to host one of those, but...
And we also have, of course, our wonderful Al Luckow, and he's a new media architect. Good morning, Al.
Hello, everybody.
Ben, I actually wanted to start with you because last night you went to see a show that I'm, well, up at UCSC.
Yes, indeed. I saw Mixed Nuts, which is Tandy Beal's show, Tandy Beal and Company, and they put on the circus, basically, in main stage, and it was absolutely fantastic. Yeah.
And you actually got a couple comps to give away during the show, right?
I did get comps. So
we're giving two tickets away today to a listener that will be able to pay attention enough to answer our question. We're going to ask a question in the middle of the break, about half an hour, so about 20 minutes. So pay attention to our news story. Something will change your life, and the show will be tonight.
We're not eligible, though, right?
No, we're not.
So then I don't have to pay attention.
No, don't pay. Good. In fact, if you paid attention, the show would be changed.
Right. Can we call in during while we're on air?
Just let you know that we're talking about Mixed Nuts, the Nutcracker Remixed. It's at UCSC. It opened last weekend. I believe it was this weekend. In any case, it plays through December 6th. And tickets information is, of course, available at the UCSC Ticket Office, the Santa Cruz Civic Box Office, and at santacruztickets.com.
Indeed.
And we will be asking for... But tell me what about the show.
I was just going to say it did open actually last night. So last night at 7. And I was there. It was fantastic. And there's another. Oh, yeah. So the tickets are for tonight at 7.
Okay. So
if you can make it tonight at 7.
Then pay attention, Geek Speak. If not, don't.
Yeah, if
and
not,
podcast
don't.
Podcast listeners, don't even pay attention.
Yeah, podcast
okay,
listeners.
Okay, so last week I was there with Eric at the main stage. And we were talking about the Starscape. You saw the stars. So that's actually a whole bunch of fiber optic points in the black field, and that goes down to two bundles or multiple bundles on stage left and stage right.
Five on each side,
right? You went backstage then.
We wandered.
And I took just my I wanted to see how good the fiber optics were, and I just took my LED flashlight. That's pretty bright.
Ow.
Right?
Don't shine that in my face.
And I just shined it on that, and the stars field lit up.
Yeah,
I mean, it's really effective.
Wow. It's a good star drop too. You know, like star drops are notoriously awful to set up, you know, because normally they're Christmas lights. And so you have these strands of Christmas lights that are running. And then, of course, one bulb goes out and then the whole
star. We're talking about a giant piece of black cloth, probably 30 feet, 40 feet long, and 20 feet
like
high.
If you imagine a curtain that goes all the way from stage left to stage right, all the way from the bottom of the stage to the top of the stage, and it's got, you know, stars. That's a good point. And it's got stars in it. And of course, normally they're Christmas lights. But
these are all just a whole bunch of fiber optic points.
Yeah.
Light. And the light emitters, the lights, have color wheels in them. Actually, they have three different light sources for RGB.
And really? Are you sure? I thought it was a color rainbow wheel.
No, it's three different lamps.
Oh,
it was really
someone misinformed me about that one.
Yeah, sorry, man.
Yeah, so it's like a dichro.
You're the theater major. You're supposed to know these things.
Yeah, I know. I should. Well, actually, I don't know.
It was funny because when it was fired up at first, when I went over there, like one third of the globes were burnt out. Lamps were burnt out. And so all the you couldn't get white, you know, not any of them.
Uh-huh.
Anyway.
Yeah,
except for my flashlight. Okay, moving on. We'll talk about Mixed Nuts a little bit later. Let's go on to Mr. Al Luckow. And what's going on with what's the most recent iPhone app?
This is a neat iPhone app. It's not actually for public consumption. A lot of times when
you consume iPhone apps?
Yeah, I eat a couple.
That's disgusting.
The thing about iPhone apps is that when you're a developer, you get a method of putting it on your own phone so you can test it. So you can have it's a little file and you can register it and then you can use it. So a lot of people build these apps and you know, you don't really see them in the app store because maybe they're not approved, you know. And this one is, I ran across, it's some of the engineers at National Instruments in Texas built this little iPhone app to drive a car.
Oh, no.
So they set up the car and they put like gears and stuff around the steering wheel. And they have like a wrench that pushes down on the accelerator. Mm-hmm. And the way that the iPhone controls the car is that the accelerometer in the iPhone steers. The accelerometer is a thing inside the iPhone. They can tell which...
You can tilt it.
You can tilt it, and it knows in space where it's going. So you're able to hold the iPhone and then tilt it, and that steers the car. And then there's a slider that will control the speed. So you're able to and they have videos of this of these guys driving the car, and they're like sitting on the hood. Holding
Is there a brake as well?
You know, funny thing, when I read this whole thing, they don't seem to mention brakes.
Yeah, well, because I was thinking if you're sitting on the hood of a car and you're controlling it, you do not want a little button that's shiny that says brake.
I don't think so.
That's scary.
I think maybe they just lower the acceleration or something.
The other thing is, having an accelerometer be a steering mechanism, so you're going at high speed, let's say mm-hmm. you're going like just even 40 miles an hour, mm-hmm. and you then turn. Well, as your car turns, the accelerometer is going to have more rotation.
You know, and then what if you get a call? Hello? But it's obviously just experimental, and,
sure.
and they have a video of this, and we have a link to it. It's on YouTube, and they've already got 500,000 hits.
Right,
which
right.
A lot.
Well, you know, driving the car.
Yeah, so people are like watching this, and it might be of interest to check out and see crazy things. So it's a kind of a crazy iPhone device, I guess.
Yeah. Last night I was watching Star Trek, the most recent movie.
Right.
Getting very into it.
I heard about that.
And yeah.
Oh, is it on DVD now?
It's on DVD.
I should know this.
Ooh. Such a good movie. You should have come over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, it's a really good movie. But there's not enough
good
Klingons. There's
too.
Not enough Klingons in it.
There aren't
any.
I know. It's really frustrating.
That's right. There's the Klingons.
Hey, Miles, how's it going? Your next news story?
And with that segue, I caught the story about a dad who spoke only Klingon to his child for 3 years. Actually, he spoke a little bit of both, but he was training his child to speak Klingon for the first 3 years of his life. Curious to see how the language acquisition, if it would take.
He experimented on his child.
Yeah, but the thing is...
How's the kid's accent?
As it turns out, this happened 15 years ago, and the kid is a teenager now, and
he's
perfectly
well-adjusted. Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
The thing is, he is a linguist, a world-class one. And
wait, the kid?
The father.
Okay.
And he writes translation software, and one of the transliteration items is for Klingon. And he thought it would be interesting to go through it with his child. And the thing is, he was still interacting with his child. He was still,
right.
you know, doing stuff like that. So, and it wasn't exclusive. There was exposure to, mm-hmm. In this case, English, his native language. So I don't know if it would go down as parent abuse, per se.
Does the kid know how to speak Klingon still?
Oh, yes.
Interesting.
Giajabi.
Well, I got to start my kids on
that
English.
That was nonsense. That wasn't anything.
Giajabi. Right.
But it did bring up an interesting thought of people were saying, oh, my God, this is horrible. This is, you know, how could this kid, you know, manage? And as it turns out, a child who's exposed to multiple languages at a young age is going to do better with language, even if they only end up speaking primarily one language,
yeah.
than if they only have one language to work with.
Hmm. All right. Thank you very much. And Al, you're posting a link for us?
Yeah, there is a link in there already, and I was just trying to... I found a bunch of Klingon phrases I was trying to say, but I don't think I can...
I think Ben's got pretty good Klingon.
I got to talk to this kid who knows it, because it's...
I bought a Klingon dictionary when I was in middle school, back before I realized that wasn't
just
socially acceptable.
Yeah, Ben, go on.
Oh, sorry. Well, I got it for 50 cents at the library.
I had the Physics
sale.
Of Star Trek
And it was
book.
Worth every
awesome.
Penny.
Yeah,
that's not mistakes, actually.
Yeah, that is a good point. The Physics of Star Trek book was fantastic book. Really fantastic book.
We're geeks.
I guess we are. Yeah, in any case.
Okay, so Ben, let's hear some Klingon. Go ahead and go to that page and let's hear some phrases.
Habsosi ok. That means your mother has a smooth forehead.
Yeah, that's a good
that's
insult.
A great yeah. insult. Yeah.
See, the great thing is we could make anything up yeah. and say, like, that means that you know the geeks are really cool.
That should be the question. That should be the question for the mixed nets tickets. How do you say your mother's forehead smooth?
Habsi uk.
How do you say beam me up? Dach mein Czech. Right. Okay. No, there you go. That's
you
like
that one.
That one of four that I know. It's in a Star Trek
do you know
movie.
Any French?
The context is
yeah,
clear.
Yeah, it actually.
No.
Know Spanish?
No.
Yeah, it reminds me of the Latin quote: "Quid Latina dictum sid altum sonator."
Yeah, it reminds me
what
of
does that
too.
Mean? Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking.
It reminds us all of
when
that.
I woke up this morning, I was like, you know.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
That which is said in Latin sounds profound.
Nice. I've heard you say that before. It's awesome.
That's your email signature, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Yeah. He's smart. Man, I didn't realize Miles was so smart.
That or just pretentious.
Wow.
Maybe a bit of both.
Whenever I hear about Latin, I think about that great quote of Quayle's, I think, where he was in...
He who?
I think Quayle.
Vice President.
I think it was Dan
He was in Quayle. Latin America, yeah.
And what did he say? He's like...
I wish I had taken Latin in high school or Latin in school.
No, I think it was like, I wish I'd paid more attention in Latin in school so I can speak the language. Speaking of South America. Is it Ben's
okay,
turn?
You need
it
to give up these segues because they're just not working, honey.
Tell us about the end of the world, Ben.
Oh, God, the end of the world.
That was pretty good, except for it was actually not South America. It's North America.
Speaking of South America?
Central America.
Speaking of the planet Earth.
That
gosh,
covers it.
Is something going to
happen? Let's talk about the Mayan calendar.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. Okay.
It's South America. Yeah.
The Mayan calendar. December 21st, 2012, the Mayan calendar will click over to 13000000. Some number of zeros after that. Which, of course, you can infer would mean the world is going to end, right? Because it's 13 and then it's zero, which is...
I guess another
one didn't click over. I thought it reset back.
Oh yeah,
to zero.
Well,
the way to think about it is
the 13th time the Mayan calendar is reset. That's what it is.
And another way of saying that is not that it resets, but that it just goes to the next. I mean, you could say that we reset at
every
thousand,
year.
every millennium. We do that as well.
Our calendar resets every year, though.
Well, so does I mean they. We have weeks, we have days, we have weeks, we have months, and all of these things are technically resettings, right? They're like, let's start another month. Oh. And in the larger form of year, it makes sense. And then we can even talk about decades. And then, of course, when millenniums happen, we kind of freak out.
Every second.
And that's basically what we're talking about the Mayan calendar.
And now we need to make sure we find John Cusack and get into a private plane and try to avoid having the ground crumble from underneath.
Will Smith. Where's Will Smith? He'll save us, right? He always saves
us. So what about
every movie.
2012?
Okay, so 2012.
Not the movie, I'm assuming.
So there's all this folklore and everything. And as this rumor is spread, it's become more and more insidious. Basically, a lot of people think the world is going to end. It's not. Don't prepare for it. Don't preemptively do things like commit suicide before the world ends because it's not going to end. I mean, you know,
You've
we've
heard
seen
of the Darwin Awards, right?
I mean, I guess you could call it a Darwin Award of some sort. But people did that with the year 2000 because they assumed that computers were going to not just crash, but maybe like take over the world and kill people. And then same with Comet Hale-Bopp when that was in the sky. Everyone was, you know, some people were freaking out about that. It was awesome.
That was really cool.
That was like my...
Yeah, I could see that from my backyard. I remember that was like a big, like white, puffy marshmallow in the night sky.
I could
actually during the day, you could see it.
Yeah, you could.
That
I could
really
see that
neat.
From my bed when I was falling asleep every night. Comet Hale-Bopp. Yeah. It wasn't just like Comet Hale or Hale-Bopp.
So what you were saying is that you feel like people are kind of stressing out about it, and from a geek's perspective, nothing's going to happen.
Yeah, it's just frustrating. It's just a lot of
it's
sensationalism
like
over nothing.
Which is
and you can see the way this myth that this folklore has evolved over just even the last couple of years. You know, like some people were talking about the planet Nibiru colliding with the Earth, and this, of course, psychics are warning us about this, and psychics are reputable as far as astronomy and predictions.
I sense sarcasm.
Maybe a little bit. Which apparently it has an orbital period of 3,600 years, and that's why we haven't seen it and everything. But it's kind of silly considering we're tracking all these near-Earth objects, which are not the size of planets. And then, you know, there are all of these books. One of NASA's articles said, as of June 2009, on Amazon.com, there are more than 175 books listed dealing with the doomsday, the 2012 doomsday.
So what we should really say is get your manuscript in now for plays and movies.
Yeah,
and if you
exactly.
want to start writing, write about 2012.
Speaking of manuscripts and scripts, there's a movie coming out in December about this year about the world ending. Of course, it's by the same guy who did The Day After Tomorrow. And I think he did Independence Day as
well?
Yeah,
I think he did Independence.
Yeah, something like that.
It's funny you mentioned that. Lyle and I were having lunch the other day talking about the bad science in The Day After Tomorrow.
Oh. And
what
actually,
you call it, The Day After Science?
That's great.
That was the one where the troposphere like collides with the planet. Like
the air from the troposphere like, yeah. shoots down to the planet's surface.
And then we're talking about, wait, everything cold freezes. Air and you go down to a denser, and you go down, so you have denser.
So the pressure increases. It's going to warm up.
And then, like,
don't
I don't know
talk
if
about that. Science, what?
The other thing that was great is that, like, everything was freezing. Buildings were freezing. Cars were freezing such that the fuel lines would freeze. Like, everything was freezing really quickly. And people would run into a room, and there's, like, a little fire in the corner.
Yeah,
and,
yeah, that was.
Ooh, yeah, it saved
But they closed the door.
They closed the door, yeah.
They closed the door, and they
and, were. And Miles were talking about, like, if it actually could get that cold, like, let's say it's, like, absolute
then, yeah,
zero.
The fire's toast.
Well, you'd get a fire to be warm enough, but one half you would be on fire, and the other half you'd be freezing.
That's like the smaller a black hole gets and then the closer you get to you get ripped apart
right,
piece
exactly.
by piece.
And basically he and I started figuring out, like, how could we solve that? We'd have to have a radiator system. So you have a you know, we're like, trying to solve the problem. Anyway, yeah.
It's not a real problem, of course.
So
and also Ask an Astrobiologist, which is a thing featured on NASA's site, has received almost a thousand questions about the planet Nibiru in 2012 and everything. And they posted like 200 answers to deal with these people who are
Why
really
are
honestly legitimately panicking.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
you know, people chill out. It's not
no,
gonna
they're not legitimately panicking.
No, some of them
I'm sorry.
Oh, oh, good point. And you know, and then of course as this has evolved, people are saying, oh, the magnetic poles will flip and then something weird will happen there. The best is the planet's or Earth's magnetic poles will flip, causing the rotation of the planet to reverse.
Why?
What?
Well, Superman can do that.
Oh,
that's
God.
True.
It hurts so much to read this. So
the stupid, it okay. burns.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so, first off, the rotation of the planet has nothing to do with its magnetic
sphere. Yeah, there's a thing called inertia,
so,
and it's,
yeah,
you know.
There's a lot of mass doing something. It's going to be hard to change that. The magnetic pole switching or flopping, of course, that's happened over time. I remember being really stressed about this when I was getting out of college, and I was talking with the electrical engineer, and he's like, so? I'm like, no, there'd be a giant pulse wave of, why? Nothing would happen. And I started, like, thinking about the calculation. I was like, oh, you're right.
And also, like, that's going to happen sometime in the next, like, several thousand years. We don't know exactly
if
when.
Lost,
somewhere around
if
now,
we lost our magnetic protection.
That would be bad.
We'd be in bad shape.
Yeah, I used to be neighbors with a PhD in geology.
Mm-hmm.
I remember talking about, oh, the poles are switching. And he just kind of shook his head and patted me on the head. That's nice. Yeah, that's not really the issue. And I really can't explain to you what the issue is because you haven't had the education for it. So
nice
he did all this in an Italian accent.
All right. So see, that's always nice.
So anyway, take the movie with, I don't know, a full ocean of salt and more than just a grain.
In the movie, I saw that in the preview, they show a tidal wave going over the White House.
Yeah. So it's real.
It's probably worth seeing just for that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the special effects in this movie are probably going to be absolutely amazing.
That's what I think. It's for the ride. You go to a movie like that for the ride.
Exactly. But right. it's just the few people that take it seriously. If you find someone taking it seriously, just seriously, like, I don't know.
Slap in the face. Virtually yeah. slap. Face.
I wouldn't say that. Lyle said that.
Slap the tinfoil hat right off their head.
Yeah.
Speaking of movies, Al?
Yes.
Google?
Oh, yeah. Google is opening, is starting, it's in beta right now. It's a new technology that they say will be able to add captions to videos. So when you upload a video, it's going to, you know, listen to the words being said and then caption it underneath as the video plays.
Nice.
So, but it's in beta right now, and from all reports, it seems to run pretty well. But obviously, there's going to be funny things.
Right.
Right? The only ones, the only places that are really kind of testing it right now is just a handful of things. Like PBS is doing something, National Geographic, and a couple of universities. But they also have, in the meantime, a way of saving a text file. So when you upload a video, you can put all the text in a text file and upload that at the same time, and then Google will match your text with the – it'll somehow be able to figure out. And then at least you're able to get the right text in there, so you'll have captioning.
The dictionary of words that it will use as the closed caption creation will be off your script, so it'll match really well.
Right. So they can kind of – they just – you know. So that's sort of neat. I mean, that's
I think it's great.
You know, speech recognition, videos.
It's awesome.
Google, another landmark thing.
Thank you very much, Al. Miles, what's up?
So I was thinking when we were in the green room talking, listening to Dr. Don's show, and there was a comment, something along the lines of, I wish he had better control over his sphincter. And I was thinking, God, I wish we could say something like that on our show, but we'd probably get a...
You just did. It's true. Lots of times I'm listening to Don's show, and she's talking about some pus boil on someone's shoulder, and it's erupting, and then she's talking about, you know, reproduction tract systems, and her show just sounds so much more interesting than ours.
But then I came across – I remembered a news story I read in the last week, so it's still topical, which was a case of a guy with a bionic sphincter.
Why did he have a bionic sphincter?
He was in a motorcycle crash. Which heavily damaged
a bionic anal sphincter?
There's a lot of sphincters.
There's
in
other
the body.
Sphincters in the body. Okay,
right.
All right. So he got a motorcycle accident
And had severe damage, and he was lucky to get away with his life. But he had a problem where he was fitted with a colostomy bag because of this accident. Well, the surgeons took some muscle from above his knee and fitted it around his tuchus, supplied electrodes to it, and then provided him a remote control.
So he could. So it was closed all the time, I'm assuming? And then the remote control, it would open the sphincter?
Right, exactly.
So he had a remote control for his bowels?
Yes.
Wow. You do not want to lose that.
Right, but at the same time, it's as opposed to having a colostomy bag.
Yeah. And well, it seems to make
so
sense.
So it's – and it was just this – it seems so interesting to think, I can finally talk about –
So they actually used organic tissue from his body.
Oh, yeah.
Interesting, but they couldn't get the nerve endings to work. I wonder if that was what was wrong.
Well, no, they – Yeah, it's a different muscle. And
Yeah. That's pretty cool. All right. Remote control for sphincter.
I would imagine it's similar to if you're paralyzed, for example.
Yeah.
The muscles still work in your leg, but you don't have any
control. I was wondering
if
you could just add
connection
if you could use the same muscle system and just have remote sensors, you know, that did that.
One really important thing I would think of is how is this remote control work? Because you don't want something else on the same frequency as your...
Yeah, I was just thinking it's not like a normal remote control for a TV because that would be IR, and then you'd have to have an exposed sensor. You don't want that. You want some kind of Wi-Fi one.
Wi-Fi or radio. And yeah,
you Bluetooth and you got to sync with it and you're like, no, it's not syncing.
Or like someone turns their phone on in the room. And
it actually doesn't say that it is wireless.
Oh. Okay, well, so probably isn't.
So I don't know. Yeah. It's a palm-sized remote control that he carries in his pocket.
Yeah. I would say probably non-wireless because what's the, I mean.
That just adds a whole another slew of risks.
Yeah, exactly. All right, like misfiring or losing the remote.
Misfiring.
All right, thank you very much for making us sound more like Don's show or something?
Well, we really don't. Her show is about education. Ours is about, hey, look at this. It's like the sideshow in a carnival.
All right. Ben, the analog hole is the idea that even if you have a whole bunch of digital encoding of content and you can't copy that because it's encrypted and all these things, eventually a human being can experience the movie. They can watch the screen. They can listen to the audio. And therefore, that last little leg is what some people call the analog hole, meaning you can copy at that point. But, of course, you're not getting a perfect replication. So what is the MPAA doing this
time? Well, exactly. Just to expand upon that point, I think you put it really well in saying that any time that a human can experience any kind of medium, be it audio or video or something like that, that is the place where you could actually copy it, right? So even if you have all of this production in place and everything, if you have a movie on your screen playing back and you're watching it, you could always point a video camera and potentially, you know, copy that movie or something.
Sure.
And so there are a lot better ways of doing that as far as quality, like just capturing a direct analog out or something like that from your TV or something. The MPAA, the Motion Picture Association of America, has been kind of hoping that they could do something about this for a while. It's called the analog hole. And so recently, just last week, they went to the FCC to ask about selectable output control. Output control, it was banned by the FCC back in 2003. It's the idea that you as a content provider could control where its output. So you could say, oh, I don't want this to go out of composite jacks or S-video jacks. I only want this to go out of, say, HDMI. Excuse me, yeah. Because that's a much more protected way of delivering the video to the screen.
So you'd actually encode the content, the DVD or whatever, so that it would only output. So then players would have to read that ability.
Yeah, exactly. And so there's this kind of argument going on. The MPAA wants to be able to turn – basically, you can think of it as the MPAA wants to be able to turn off certain ports on the back of your TV or the back of your monitor or out of your computer, depending on what you're
Which
watching.
Which actually already kind of happens because, as I recall, DVDs don't always go out all the same ports as, like, the television signal.
Yeah, that is true. That can be circumvented, but, I mean, we're talking about, like, for example –
That's normally a hardware manufacturer decision. That's not actually the content provider's decision.
Exactly. Hardware and software kind of work together on that.
Right.
So, you know, potentially you could write yourself a DVD player and crack the code and then do it.
The Apex players in the early days could play anything.
They were not region encoded.
They were not region encoded. That's what it was, right?
Or they did not obey. They were region free, is what they were called.
Yeah.
So, Lyle, we were also talking about this type of thing. We had another name for the analog hole. You had a wonderful...
Meat something.
No. I think it was simpler. Reality.
Oh,
the real world. That was it. The real world.
The real world. It's hard to encode the real world.
Yeah, it's analog. It's an analog hole.
It's called reality.
Yeah.
So the thing that I was found curious was why you were describing this. I was like, how could? Because I wasn't sure what the story was. Right.
Yeah.
It's like just turning off certain types of ports. That's simple. But I was thinking, well, you could theoretically have one of these sensors that does facial detection, right? And then have the screen only display itself towards the angle of a face, right?
Oh,
and then you have to have retina scanning. I mean, you could basically make sure that only a human was watching it. And then you have licensees fees off of how many eyeballs, and then at some point...
How many eyeballs?
And so the eyeballs are playing it.
Two licenses then, for you. You watch it without depth, and you close one eye.
And then if you've got a dog in the room, you have to pay twice as much as them for the movie.
Yeah,
it would just
that's
be, you know...
Well, so the good thing about SOC, selectable output control, is that say movie companies could release movies on demand on cable on demand, streaming cable on demand or something earlier, right? Because they wouldn't have to worry about people copying it and then undercutting DVD sales, right? So that's one advantage, but there's so many disadvantages. I think one of the largest is that some people don't have TVs that have digital inputs or DVD players that have digital outputs, right? I mean, if you look on the back of your TV, if you have a round plug, it's called an RCA plug. If you have a bunch of RCA plugs like yellow and red and white, then those are analog. You know, if you have an S-video as well, that's the black one with the little holes and stuff and the line, that's also analog. And so if those are your only input sources, which is actually, I think, a lot of people, then you wouldn't be able to play certain kinds of media.
Right. Well, thank you very much.
That's a problem.
Thank you very much, Ben, for this information. We have a podcast for this week. Anybody have a podcast this week? Moving on. No podcast this week. Listen to Geeks. Listen to Dr. Don. That's a good one.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
Ask Dr. Don.
Yeah. Ask Dr. Don. It's available through from KOSP's website, also from NPR, just like GeekSpeak. So take a look at it. She's really quite knowledgeable. And she gets to talk about things we don't talk about on our show. So, but without the humor. Much more intellect. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's a hard one.
Far be it for us to be known for our intellect.
So we are going to give away some tickets to Tandy Beal's fun-filled production of Mixed Nuts, the Nutcracker Remixed. And I'm trying to think of what a good question is from the first half of the show. And I think the one that I want to do... Any of the geeks got one?
I have one.
Okay, you said we didn't have to pay attention.
Oh, that's right. Okay, so why didn't Al have to pay attention? No, that's not a question. Ben?
What?
That is a good question.
Well, okay, one question. This might be too hard. What is the name of the planet that is supposed to collide with the Earth?
Let's do a real thing instead of a virtual thing. I'm not going to do that one. No.
Could do what day is the planet supposed to collide? No. Anyone have a better one?
Yeah. What language?
That's easy.
Too simple?
Yeah.
Man.
What's Klingon for beam me up? I said it.
Oh, man.
There are several.
That's going to be a whole bunch of people getting on Google.
That's horrible. No, I can't
remember that.
That's true.
I can't do that.
There are several answers to that.
All
what's
right,
the one I said?
Let's see. We did the mixed nuts thing. We did Al's story about something. What was Al's first story about? That's good enough, isn't it?
That's a good one.
Okay, Al's first story. Al had a story about something, doing something, just describe what it is. That was his first story, is right after Mixed Nuts. And you can give us a call to win the tickets, 476-2800, or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. You can also just call and ask us anything you'd like. It's lots to put on Rick, but he'll answer your call for the question that will win you tickets to tonight's performance of Mixed Nuts at UCSC. And the phone numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Or you can just give us a call with questions and comments about technology. And we have had a few people call, so let me go ahead and mention what they mentioned to us. And that is that Jeffrey from Scotts Valley called in and said, Dan Quayle's story is about Latin is not true. And Snopes.com knocked it down. So there you go. That's good to know. That's good to know. Snopes. Thanks. Snopes, by the way, if somebody sends you something, you think, oh my gosh, the world's going to end, then you go to Snopes.com and you look up that phrase. Just take a phrase of the email that was sent to you, and they'll have it, and they'll say no or yes. And it's a really great, great source. And then Charlie, who produces Dr. Don's show, has a correction. Spinning of Earth in relation to metallic core is what's causing magnetic fields. Yes, the spinning of the magnetic core is what's causing the magnetic field, but not the rotation of the planet. So,
yeah, so that's an example.
Effectively, the core and the planet could modify to each other would be problematic potentially.
Right, the core does not necessarily spin. It doesn't even spin all together. It's actually a
you don't really think of it spinning. Think of it as more
but it's
like
not relative,
flow,
yeah,
like liquid
and it's
flow.
Not relative to the crust. Per se, there's some...
And the magnetic field does not have to do with the movement, relative movement of the crust. If our planet was spinning a lot faster or a lot slower and the core was still doing the same thing, the magnetic field would be the same.
Yeah, and that's correlation versus causation. It happens that they're linked in some way, but if we were to have our poles flipped, then that wouldn't necessarily affect.
Okay, so Jerry Cook called in and answered the question correct what Al's first story was, but he can't go tonight, so...
Mm-mm.
Jerry's awesome.
Man, this
he's not going to take the tickets.
Like crazy.
I know there's like six calls coming in
tonight at 7 p.m.
People are listening to us.
Seven people are listening.
Wow, yeah, that awesome. Red light won't stop blinking.
Man.
So the right answer is coming up. And what line is it on? Dun, 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 dun. Well, what we'll do is we'll do one more news story while we're waiting to figure that all out. And I think, gosh, whose turn is it? We covered man's controlled bionic bottom and the MPPA. So now, Al. Hi.
Hey.
Do you mind if we do the. Well, I'll let you pick one from the list.
Well, there is...
I like the fast car.
The fast car, the race to build. How about this one? There's an original Apple One on eBay. And this is kind of cool. This is something I found on TUAW.com, which is the unofficial Apple weblog. And this has been on eBay. It's an original Apple One, and it's got all the documentation. It's got some really kind of cool things with it. This was the Apple One was the first computer. This is when Jobs and Woz were still building these things in a garage. And somebody ordered one of these things, and they have the actual thing. They've got the documentation. It's sort of a non-working Apple One motherboard, but it's in the original shipping box. And the return address is the home of Steve Jobs' parents.
No, it's great.
and it's got the original manual, complete with the schematics and how to take the motherboard and build a workable computer out of it. And there's a tape interface card that you use to load it. You know, you used to be able to load with using a cassette tape. And it has a bunch of little things. And it's also got an invoice that's just typed out on a piece of paper. They've got a little letter that's signed by Steve Jobs. That tells how, you know, you can become a dealer. And it's just typed. It's funny because it's typed on a loose leaf piece of paper.
Right.
It's a notebook, loose leaf piece of paper, but it's typed on it. And it's Steve Jobs writing the whole thing. And he signs it Steven Jobs, trying to look, you know, like an adult and stuff like that.
So when the Apple One was happening, these guys were in college, of course.
Yeah.
Steve and Steve were in college, yeah.
They're bidding. I mean, the bidding starts for this thing at like 50 grand, but...
How much was the original?
And it can't play music. It
was the original was $666.
That of course, you know, knowing Woz, that's the reason why it was that number is because that's a fun number.
People say, "Oh, it's Satan's number" and all that kind of stuff. But you know,
if you're curious about Woz's thoughts of numbers, listen to our Geek Speak episode where we interview him. I mean, he just loves numbers.
He just liked the number just because it was repetitive and it was close. So, I mean, I know that for a fact. We asked them.
All right. So thank you very much for the news story. And so good luck on winning the Apple One.
Yep.
And I'm looking forward to playing, doing, like, what can you do with it? Like, nothing.
You can say you have it.
You can say you have it. Yeah. And you can run it, probably.
Probably could get
Type
it working.
Documents. But, you actually put it together, wouldn't that take away the value of it, much the same way that, you know, a G.I. Joe action figure is worth more when it's in the packaging, but
I think
not when you actually start playing
with
it? I think
my son would differ on that opinion. I think a G.I. Joe action figure is worth more out of the package in his hand.
Oh, yeah.
In the dirt. All right. Sheila from, I'm assuming, Santa Cruz. Sheila, welcome
Santa
to GeekSpeak.
Cruz.
Hi. Hi. Thanks for calling in. So the first story that Al covered today was about what?
About the iPhone that can drive your car. Or crash your car.
That's better.
That's correct. So, Sheila, you looking forward to going to see Mixed Nuts tonight?
Yeah.
Great. Well, thanks for listening to Geek Speak, and I think Rick's got your information. Actually, just know your last name, and so does Rick, so we'll have it at the door for you. And thank you so much for calling and listening to Geek Speak, and enjoy the show. And if you wanted to shoot us an email afterwards and let us know how it was, we'd love to hear it.
Thank you very much.
Take care, Sheila. Bye-bye.
Bye.
So Mixed Nuts is like the Nutcracker Suite, but like sort of a parody?
It's like a circus.
It's kind of a circus mixed nuts, mixed bag of circus things kind of loosely to the story of the Nutcracker.
So it's like
the Nutcracker,
Christmas
but
holiday
kind of
circus thing.
Yeah, it's got some ballet, it's got some tricks, it's got some aerial stuff, it's got
juggling.
It's got a lot of juggling.
Any unicycles?
It's got some unicycles.
Are there any lasers?
Gosh.
I might bring a laser pointer.
Does the star drop count as lasers?
Star drop does not, because it's not cohesive
light.
It's similar to cohesive.
That sounds kind of neat, you know, something for the holidays that isn't Nutcracker Sweet. Specifically, I mean,
not there's anything wrong with that.
It's
Nutcracker
great.
Sweet's
it's,
being happening
fabulous.
Soon, and my
right.
niece is in it, so
oh,
go see
great.
That, too.
Mm-hmm.
And that'll be the civic.
Don't miss it.
Yeah. So that's Mixed Nuts, the Nutcracker Remixed, a circus performance, Tandy Beal and company groups, lots of people involved, actually. Sovoso is also involved with Lori Rivera, and dancers, jugglers, acrobats, gymnastics, and more. It's at the UCSC main stage. You can get information about the show at UCSC Ticket Office, the Santa Cruz Civic Box Office, and, of course, at SantaCruzTickets.com. Ben, one more thing about that?
Yeah, I just forgot to mention, Sovoso is awesome. They're an a cappella group, and they do pretty much all of the music for it. And they are just incredible. These people are singing for, like, 2 hours straight with just an intermission, and I don't actually ever see them drink water on stage. It's amazing. I don't understand how.
Most singers have magical glands that infuse their throat with liquid.
So it's a cappella.
Yes.
Wow.
No, they
cool.
have these glands by remote control.
So you went and got seats and sat where?
I sat in section. I sat outdoor. It's the section that's house right of the center. No, actually, we sat at the very right of the center section. That's what it was. While facing the stage, the right wall facing the stage.
Okay.
Pretty good seats, yeah. And my friend did lighting design too, so.
Cool.
Very good show.
All right. Thank you very much, Ben, for going to see that and letting us know. And I guess we've got some questions about the internets. So let's go ahead and take that call from Aptos. Ed, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hi, this is Ed. I'm glad you're not asking me any Klingon questions because I don't know any answers. my room in a house is sort of a long house, and it's opposite the end of the house where the I have cable internet, where the router, and the modem are. And I need to, and I think I'm going to give up soon and go to DSL. But I was trying to figure out how to get access from one end to the other. I'm going to try and get 150 foot Ethernet line somehow strung outside of the house. But in case I can't do that, I went out half a year ago and saw this brand new thing in the market. I thought I'd try it, and I didn't get around to getting it to work before the store returned ended. So now I'm just going to. Really hard to see if I get it going. It's a Netgear Mocha coax Ethernet adapter kit, and you put a box. It's got two boxes, and you can buy more. One box, one of the.
You go from Ethernet boxes. To through coax, and then another adapter, and
you go
back to Ethernet.
So
you can run long distances.
Yeah, through the coax to the modem. Then there's an Ethernet line that goes back to the to this box, and then you take the other box.
I think Ethernet can run like 500 feet, so to go to an effort technology isn't really necessary. Miles is scrunching his forehead.
But running the line is going to be.
Meters,
but running the line.
No, I don't know.
Running the line of Ethernet's more difficult than running the cable because you already have the cable installed?
Well, I'm going to probably have to run it outside at someone else's house, and I don't know.
Yeah, sure.
Why don't you just use wireless?
Because you're having so much luck
with that. They have wireless, and I'd have to hook up a repeater.
Yeah.
It's a long house, and to hook up a repeater might not even work well. Mm-hmm. I'm going to try a repeater. There's another name for those. What do you call the repeaters? Extenders? I'll try that, but the wireless is so slow. I mean, have an airport, Apple Airport Express.
Oh, you've got, so you are you using a Mac? Is an Apple?
I'm not on a Mac. The main computer, the box is.
You shouldn't see really that slow of speeds of wireless. Wireless is going to be comparable, if not faster, than your feed from the internet service provider. I mean, the speeds are, you shouldn't notice that being the problem. Unless you've got interference, like a microwave or a cell phone that's the wrong frequency, then you could have a problem. I definitely would push towards use a cable.
I'll try.
And I know it's somebody else's house.
Buying any of these cable?
I don't use cable extensions. I just have a big spool, 1,000 feet of Ethernet cable, and I run cable when I need it.
So I can go up to 500 feet, and I want to, I'm an Ethernet line.
I know you can go up to 500 feet because I've done
100
it.
100 meters.
100 meters. There you go. So 300 feet, more like. So go a little bit smaller. But you should be fine with that. And the problem with the cables that you're going to get, the Ethernet cable you're going to get, like if you go buy a 100-footer, it's going to be really expensive. Don't do that. You need to find somebody that will do it for you or has a spool of cable. That's going to be the cheapest way. The problem is that most of the time that cabling is not for outdoor use. You can go into a basement, no problem, into an attic, no problem. But again, if it's not your house, drilling through the walls becomes problematic. The wireless solutions, honestly, I never seem to hear real great success stories on hopping with wireless. And I've tried setting it up, and I used to have a house right next to my parents, next doors, and we did wireless for a while, and it just never really worked, and I finally just ran a cable. And what I did is I just ran one of this cheaper cable, and it's $100 for 1,000 foot of this cable, right? It's not that expensive. And if you have it, then all your friends love you. Right, Miles? Still love me, right?
And I got my own spool.
You got your own spool?
Yeah.
You don't even need me anymore.
I've never needed you.
Oh, my gosh.
I have the wireless in my house, and I'm using the airport, and I use it Airport Express. And, it does work. I mean, I it does extend my range. It does range, I'm mostly going up because my router is sort of like in the sort of basement type level, and I want to get everything to move up. And so I use the Airport Express, and that does work.
So the reason, of course, I haven't heard a lot of success stories is because of selection bias. I hear problems that people have. I don't hear six solutions.
Right.
So if you've got a solution where you're actually having a wireless access point and then you've got another rebroadcaster or a bridge, sometimes it's called bridges, but really you don't really want to use it as a bridge. You want to use it as an extender. If you have that situation where success is happening, please let us know. Send us an email at geekspeak.org. It's actually geeks at geekspeak, or you can go up and fill out our form online.
I stayed at a cheap motel once in Connecticut on a business trip, and they had an extender that worked, but I could only use my modem, card in the window, and I had to move. I had to go to their office, and I had to move the extender to the window. It had to be direct line. There couldn't be a single wall or an object.
So
even when an object parked between us, it screwed it up.
Right, and that's purely just the consumer-level stuff is lower power consumption. Miles and I are about to have this problem when he moves onto the same property I'm on. We're going to try to do a wireless bridge.
I have two wireless, and I was using it at my current place. It's just that our place is so small, it's hard to tell whether
or not. Your current house, yeah. Is your house bigger than a postage stamp? Because Thank you. And I hope that somebody calls in with a good solution. They've had success with a certain makes and models.
I think the solution to this is going to be I'm going to go DSL, because
then you
running
can get
a line to this house, if I have to keep it inside, I'm going to have to open up a whole bunch of walls.
And thank you very much for the call.
The DSL,
thank you.
The DSL is going to allow him to put the router anywhere he wants, the modem.
Right.
But it's not going to allow you to – you can't just plug into it anywhere in the house.
Right. No, but I think what he's saying is he just wants it in his room. He's wireless in his room, probably in the mesh of the house. In the living room, it's probably close enough. That's why no one else cares.
I see. Yeah.
It's the one room that's way far away.
Because I just went from DSL to cable myself.
And you're liking it, right?
I am loving it. I mean, it's
so fast.
The ceiling on cable is so much higher. You can go so much faster.
Yeah, I feel that way, too.
There's no comparison. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Miles, what about you? Do you like cable or DSL?
I like the speeds of cable. I like the price of DSL.
Man, I wish it was both worlds. All right. Well, we can take more calls with questions and comments about technology. The phone numbers are 476-2800, toll free at 1-800-655-5877. But we can also talk about the LHC. Is it up or down this week?
Well, after the bird dropped the baguette into the LHC, which, of course, caused it to shut down. I think I covered that 2 weeks
and
ago.
And proves the temporal nature of tachyons.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It proves that the LHC is coming back in time to kill itself. What?
Maybe you should explain what the
LHC is.
Listen
to an earlier show, LHC, but is. Yeah, LHC is the Large Hadron Collider.
Hadron Collider. It's a particle accelerator, and they're looking for a whole bunch of different kinds of particles, very, very heavy particles. We're actually looking for the decay products of the
This is the thing you've heard about tons of times called the... Yeah. They talk about it, and they always mention the God particle.
And everyone's always... And some people are worried it'll create a black hole and engulf the universe.
But
when
it
turns on December 21st in 2012. But in any case, so finally they have restarted the LHC after there were tons of issues with it, like helium leaks and baguettes being dropped and overheating and that kind of stuff. So it's been restarted. And this is just a brief mention that it's been restarted after 14 months. And it's kind of cool. They made two stable proton beams circulate in opposite directions. And so eventually, hopefully sometime soon, they'll go for, what was the one? It was one point something. The units are completely foreign to me, because I don't work at, as a particle physicist.
You don't speak Latin.
No, I don't.
You should go to North
this
South
was just
America.
Yesterday. Yeah, they're trying to reach, the beam energy of 1.2 trillion electron volts this weekend. That'd be really cool if they could do it, because that would be a record. Only the Tevatron has gotten close, and that was just under 1 trillion.
See, I can see why people are concerned about the 2012 when things like that exist. And you know, it's circular, too, just like the Mayan calendar circular. So
It's got three circles.
There you go.
And it's underground. It's know that all evil things happen in underground layers.
It kind of looks like Mickey Mouse. And we know that.
No,
that's
it looks more like a snowman.
All right, I'll go with that.
A disproportionately small on top and big on bottom snowman that's laying down... Under
the
ground.
I like.
You like snowmen like that? All right. So we're going to go ahead and take a call. And I'm not sure where Laura is, but Laura, you're having problems with your TV?
No, not Laura. I'm Sheila.
Well, hi, Sheila.
Hi. Hey, yeah, I just won something, but I had a question for you. You said ask more questions.
Yeah, go ahead.
Welcome back.
She's still on the line.
How do you fight the... that's Laura right there, I guess. How do you fight the... Microsoft dominance, where, for instance, on Netflix, I can't watch a movie on Mozilla. I have to go to Internet Explorer. There's at least one other application that I'm finding they're just like they do not speak that browser.
Yeah. No, that's totally common, actually. What?
I know it is. I just had never heard you guys discuss it.
Where are you listening? And where are you trying to watch TV? What's
Oh, I don't do TV, but I do on the internet, and so I've got a. Are you asking what my server is or whatever?
No, where are you trying to watch the content? What URL?
Oh, okay. Which
Netflix?
Netflix.
Yeah.
Like,
so what's going on is a lot of these service providers of content are trying to make it really hard for you to duplicate it and copy it and crack it because they don't want you to make copies, right? So they add a whole bunch of protections. And a very simple way to do that for a lot of developers is to restrict the content to only be able to be played on a certain type of environment. And so this situation, probably they're having you install or run an ActiveX component, which is an application, and that basically can only run inside Internet Explorer unless you've got a plugin in Firefox, and then you can do it that way. And it can only work with a Windows environment rather than a Macintosh. That's why you'll see a lot of times Netflix, for example, I think is only Windows, or at least it was when I canceled with them. The solution is just to follow what they want, unfortunately.
I think they're on Silverlight right now.
They're
on a Mac.
So they've switched
Netflix.
And the only other question, I know this is related. Let me just give me a second here. So you can only run it on that. With Silver Fox is what it was called, the way to make it, able to...
Silverlight?
Silverlight,
Silverlight, there you go. Sure. Silverlight. But I know that I had a related question, but I'm feeling the pressure of your time. Hold on one second.
I'm feeling the pressure of our time, too.
Okay.
Well, Sheila, send us an email. Send us an email about how the show was, and then ask us more questions then. Okay? Thank you.
Okay, perfect. Thank
you. All right,
bye-bye.
All right. We're actually going to... Yeah, it's getting it's getting close to the end. I think we're going to take some time this week with the USB of the Week because it's live, and so we'll take some more time to do that. So I'll just mention that in just a second, Al will be talking about the crazy USB of the Week device. GeekSpeak on KSP is supported by Whole Foods Market, featuring fresh farm-raised Thanksgiving turkeys free of antibiotics or added injections. Whole Foods Market in Capitola, in Santa Cruz, on Soquel Avenue, and in Monterey's Del Monte Shopping Center. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP Santa Cruz. We're streaming and podcasting at KUSP.org. GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of Online Tonight with David Lawrence and is used with permission. My name's Lyle Troxell. The geeks today are Ben Jaffe. Hey, Ben.
Hello.
Miles Elam.
Hello.
And Al Luckow, who has our crazy USB of the Week in just 1 second. GeekSpeak on the KUSP is supported by Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is opened at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. Al, what is the crazy USB of the Week for this week?
Okay, well, last week I talked about the most ridiculous, useless piece of USB equipment there is. This week, I'm going to talk about one that actually seems like it might make sense. It's called the Pro WX Wireless USB External Hard Drive. Now, this has just been announced, and it's by iMation, and they're saying that this is the first wireless USB hard drive.
See, when you say that,
I know it's weird because
USB is wired.
Yeah, that's a little odd because USB is a plug. But what they have is a dongle that you plug in there.
Okay, so the dongle's USB, and then it's wireless to
this hard drive,
which doesn't have USB on it. Right, it is wireless.
Which is wireless, yeah. Gotcha. So there's no like plug into it,
except for the hard drive probably has power.
Actually,
so it's plugged in.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. So you have to plug it in. Now you wonder, well, why would I want something like this? This is silly. Well, the reason you might like this kind of thing is because you can go up to 30 feet away from this hard drive and still be able to get a throughput speed of 480 megabytes per second.
That's really good. And how big a hard drive is it? It's a good size, right?
Roughly 800. Let's see.
Well, you could probably put any size drive in it,
it says,
right?
Just it offers 1.5 terabytes of storage.
See, this is great. You put all your movies on that. You're sitting in your laptop on your couch, and you're watching movies. You don't have to lug the hard drive around.
It says at this speed, at the speed it goes, it can finish copying the entire contents of a CD-ROM, which is about 800 megabytes, in about 50 seconds. So it's pretty fast, and you could have this thing, like say you had it in your desk, and you just show up with your laptop.
And you put in the USB dongle.
Yeah, and you're connecting to your drive.
Al, I'm a little upset because I don't think this is a crazy USB of the Week device. I want this.
It's not real crazy. I mean,
I wanted the missile launcher too.
Well, you know, the first thing I talked about for USB was like a 40-port USB hub.
See,
Everybody wants one of those.
Especially
it's crazy.
You need one of those with all these USB devices.
Man, I do. But it's crazy, but it's still useful. So this one, I thought I'd just balance it out with last week. It's actually kind
last
of
last week was completely useless, yes. As we recall, the blender.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. It's a blender. So this is by iMation, and it's a pretty cool little thing. You might want to check it out, and they say it's the first one that has ever been made. So obviously, the first one advice goes along with this.
Yeah, that's right.
What happens if you're copying some really important files and you walk into the other room?
Again, the first one advice goes along with this.
Car Talk on KSP is made possible by a grant from the Holly Family Fund and the Community Foundation of Santa Cruz County. We appreciate the support. And I mentioned Car Talk because Car Talk's coming up next. This is Geek Speak. I'm Lyle Troxell. We'll see you next week.